Welcome to Day Zero Update for September 7th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And yeah, it's not been a busy week of news, but we have plenty of things to talk about here, especially a bunch of industry news.
Yep.
A number of layoffs and some other interesting things. As well as we can tell you more about things like Hollow Knight Silksong, what's happened with that game's launch. As well as, let's say, certain games getting some dates here. We'll get to that stuff. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a good bit of Madden NFL 26. I did the review for it, released that, I think it came out the other day. Give it a 3.5 out of 5, as I enjoyed it, but had a lot of, issues with, various parts of that, and kind of reviewed it as a lapsed Madden fan, that, used to play it every year on the PS2 and then kind of lapsed on it from there, and then kind of only came back mostly as a review thing. Where I reviewed it sort of in the later Xbox 360, PS3 gen, up to, I think, Madden 25 on the PS4, Xbox One launch, and then kind of mostly just dipped in every so often on EA Play, just to play a little bit every year. This year was kind of the first one in quite a while that I've put a significant amount of time into, and came away enjoying how it plays for the most part. A lot of that is pretty well done. I think I had some issues with some of the way the defense works. Things like the way that zone and man to, man defense stuff tends to work, where it seems like zone, not many of the players really seem to move around too much in a way that seems more realistic. They kind of just tend to stand around and make it easier for opposing teams to just complete big passes and all that. That just felt like a frustrating experience with some of that stuff. So when I had chances to make my picks for plays, I ended up trying to pick more man stuff when I could. Like another thing, talking about some of the realistic nature of the game, where I feel like the game plays too fast, even on the simulation mode, where I played, you know, with 15-minute quarters, play the full game, and you just get so many more snaps than any other team gets in the simulation, in a way that was just kind of hilarious, where I'd have old man Joe Flacco leading the league in passing yards, and not because he did particularly well, but because he had, you know, at least 100 more passes than the next player, and similar on the running game stuff. Kind of a hilarious kind of way that that goes about, and having, you know, defensive players in the a lot of the high on a lot of the stat leadership or leaderboard stuff, because they just get more snaps than the average defensive player does for a lot of this stuff, which makes it hilarious once you start getting the yearly award stuff showing up that lets you know like who's in the running for these various awards. And my guys were, especially on defense, were filling up those leaderboards in ways that are very unrealistic. There's a lot of weird stuff with that. They do have nice things with like the halftime show. But it's not really a halftime show. I feel like, you know, NBA 2K tends to do better with that when they had the like TNT crew kind of doing their thing. And that's kind of where I think Madden needs to get to at some point, of having sort of a crew to kind of talk a little bit about the game. They don't need to have anything in depth, but they could certainly make comments on the game that you're playing. But then they have like a weekly recap video that's similar, but often gets stats wrong. I played a game against the Jets where I had at least 3 takeaways. Like I had two fumble recoveries and an interception. I might have had a third fumble recovery, but the weekly recap was like claiming I only had one. Things like that, where just like weird quoting of stats of a game I just played that I know for a fact are wrong. Things like that are just real weird to see. But overall, the franchise mode is pretty good for what it is, but it doesn't seem like it's really changed all that much over the last like 10 years. They add a lot of extra things like watching over your practices and doing a lot of that kind of stuff and managing your coaches and all these extra essentially like skill tree stuff you can do that I kind of stop engaging with at a certain point because it feels like just extra fluff on top of this. Luckily, you can automate a lot of that stuff. But yeah, it's that's a solid experience. Then what was it? Superstar mode is kind of their version of Road to Glory from the college football game. In fact, this is the first year you can bring your player over once they're done and graduated in college. You kind of get pulled into this, go through the combine and get ready for the draft. And you can, and the weird thing is it has you go through these different mini games for the different kind of things they have in the combine, which is all right, but they also let you retry them as much as you want. Some of them are feel like very dumb mini games. Others are fine for what they are. But you just kind of want to beat expectations or whatever, and you can tell it to get you drafted by a certain team anyway. If you want, but that's where it kind of starts getting weird because I picked the Browns to get my quarterback drafted, and that ended up getting real weird because then the team essentially has three rookie quarterbacks, and when they start messing with the roster, it gets real weird where they cut Joe Flacco. They signed new running backs and wide receivers and such that I was getting very confused whenever I saw them because I was just like, wait, that's not who I was expecting. They just kind of guys that are statistically better, but, you know, aren't on the actual team, just kind of making changes like that, which is kind of very confusing. They had an actual fullback, like most of the teams on the in the game don't have fullbacks because that's just a position that isn't really needed anymore. But they had a fullback because the AI just seems to assume that you need somebody in every slot versus that just being a place to put another running back in. And yeah, it kind of became clear after like a handful of games in this is all just funneling to the multiplayer stuff, sort of similar to the way that they 2K does for NBA 2K, where you kind of do your career mode at a certain point, then you get into the city, and then you can just focus on playing, you know, pickup games with other people and all that. So similar kind of situation. They have like a 3v3 mode for the superstar stuff. In fact, it's the top mode that's listed when you go to the side screen. The story mode or the regular mode is just called the League. And from there, you're just kind of doing a bunch of weird things, kind of just much worse version of Road to Glory, where you kind of have a pretty simple structure there. But here it's trying to be, I guess, a little more realistic, where you're dealing with a lot of what they call the sphere of influence, which is you have a bunch of these people in your inner circle, in your orbit, I guess, as well, and then people on the team. So, like, some of the players you play with will have their whatever favor for you go up or down based on how well you play with them, give them the ball, all that kind of stuff. But every week they give you one practice mini game, which are all kind of largely the same kind of mini games from Road to Glory. But you don't get a choice on any of it. It just picks one at random. And then you get one like story beats where you're like, oh, we're going to go to practice, or I can go hang out with this popular streamer and be on their stream kind of thing every week, where it's like, okay, do you want to have your whatever status with somebody in your sort of non-player circles go up, or somebody on the team kind of thing. And it's like, it's all right, but it's kind of just whatever. You get some bonus stuff if you get their things up. Mostly you want to improve your standing with like the coach and offensive coordinator, because they will unlock more things for you. I think with like wide receivers and running backs as well, they'll just get better stuff. But as you level up your player, you unlock more bonus perk stuff that you can equip, as well as skill points you can spend to make some of your stats better. Sort of similar to Road to Glory. But yeah, it's just kind of a bit of a hollow mode, just since you don't really even have stats or anything. You don't really have any idea what's going on in the league. They do have a section for some stats, but like the player stats that you would think would show like season stats just shows career stats, despite there being another option for career stats. So it's just really weird stuff. Doesn't show much of the stuff you get in the franchise mode, where you can see like franchise records for, you know, season careers and all that stuff. You don't get any of that in Superstar really. So yeah, you just get a lot of weird stuff, and it's like, and the other issue is that you don't have custom options for how long you want the quarters to be when you're playing those. It's always set to 6 minutes as far as I could see, even though I had it set to something else. And if I had the accelerated clock on, that's just eating up more time and making that much harder, which would be the case in the first few games I played, where I was like confused about what was going on and all that. But yeah, it ends up just feeling like a rough sketch of something that might be interesting, but it just kind of ignores a lot of what you would want to feel like you're part of the NFL, and not just like a dude doing some things and moving on to the next week's thing and doing some more things. You don't really get a glimpse of what else is going on. And like, Madden's had much better career modes in the past, even when there were just versions of the franchise mode that you just were locked onto one player, had no control over, you know, play calls or anything like that. So yeah, it just ends up being a weird thing. And then like the one other issue I mentioned is, one, the download center is just terrible for getting like rosters and teams and such from that other players have made, because it has pretty much no options for anything. So like, I looked at the teams, and it looks like the most generic teams possible. That's like, these must have been logos that were included in the game, versus you would expect teams that were in, you know, movies and TV shows would be filling up those slots. But I don't know what's going on there. I was looking at rosters because it was before the season started, and they did not have their sort of opening week rosters up until Thursday. And so I was looking through that, and I could not tell if any of these were recent rosters, if they didn't put like a date in the name. And like, managing all that stuff is just mostly a waste of time. So I was like trying to do something different to free up my boredom of like waiting to have final rosters before I could start a proper franchise save. So I was like trying to move players around in the rosters on the main screen to teams that were closest to where they went to college, mostly to get all the Ohio State players on the Browns and then figure everything out for everybody else. But it seems like those teams are adhere to the salary cap for some reason, even though they don't display it anywhere. Because once I started messing with the Cincinnati Bengals and cut Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, who I'd assume are their two biggest paid stars, I could not add anybody else to their roster, even the cheapest players possible, in ways that was like, this seems really bad, and it should not count the salary cap when you're just building out rosters outside of, you know, a franchise mode save kind of thing. And if I tried to do that in franchise mode, you would have to take control of every single team in the league, mm-hmm. essentially add a player to each one and just switch between them to make changes to their rosters. In a way, just like, yeah, this used to be something you could do in Madden, but they must have changed it at some point. And that's kind of disappointing with how bad the download center is for getting other rosters. It's a lot of like little stuff. There's some big stuff, but there's a lot of little stuff too that was kind of annoying. And it was just kind of like, yeah, I can't really do anything out of the ordinary. Like, maybe I could do like a fantasy draft thing, but again, you would have to take control of every single team to kind of get the teams picking the way you want. And I don't know that it allows you to do that for a draft where you would have to have everybody there at once, I assume. I don't know that it would figure out what you're trying to do and make that easier, but yeah, it's a game that you kind of have to deal with the caveats of what you want to do with the game, whether it's just playing franchise mode and dealing with fine-tuning a lot of things, sliders and, you know, settings for a more realistic playing game. Even though I think if you're playing full 15-minute quarters, that should be the most realistic version of things. But yeah, that's a game I'll probably keep playing now that, you know, the final rosters are out for the first week of the year, and I can jump into that now. So that's Madden. But yeah, let's see. I've been playing some Hollow Knight Silksong, which I'm enjoying. I'm a few hours into that, so have not had a ton of time to play it. But it's, you know, is a lot like the original game, but featuring Hornet, who's like a reoccurring character in the game.
Yeah.
Kind of like a, not a boss, but she was kind of a, somebody who wanted to help you along your journey, but, you know, needed to fight you every so often as like a skill check to make sure you were ready to go on to the next thing. And she has a really interesting moveset as a boss character, with this like needle that she can throw out and pull back with a string. And she has like diagonal dashes to the ground, that kind of stuff. And they kind of keep some of that stuff here. So instead of having the downward slash that the knight from the first game had, she has a diagonal version of that. So you hold down an attack and she will do a little diagonal dash, essentially, with the needle out. It takes a bit getting used to not being able to essentially pogo around. But I've gotten to an area where they start having some like flower bud kind of stuff you're pogoing off of, but you have to do that from an angle, which makes it a bit challenging. And she has her heel. Instead of needing to hold it down, hold down the circle button or B button or whatever you're playing it on, to heal, and then you would kind of keep healing nodes on your health bar. This, she does a chunk of it at a time. So I think initially it's 3, and I assume that extends itself later on, where you could probably do 4 or 5 at a time. But you only need to tap the circle button once to do that. But for that, you know, couple seconds, you can't move. So you very much have to pay attention to when you initiate it, much like, you know, when you try to heal up in the original game. What else does she have? She has one of the early moves you get is the ability to throw that needle out. It's called the Silk Spear, I believe. Because you get that to take down these, like, essentially like silk threads that are used to essentially create a wall. You use that to break through that, but you can also use it as like a long range attack for enemies that might be pissing you off and you want to attack them before they get close to you to start moving out of the way. So there's that. I think that's it so far for the main things that kind of set her apart from the knight from the first game. The game itself, the story-wise, Hornet is being transferred from, you know, the setting of the first game to this new area by these seemingly religious bugs and veils that at some point something happens and the cage you're being transported in gets knocked off the path it's on and kind of fall down below and are able to escape. You're trying to just figure out like what the hell's going on here. And you make it to your first NPC character and she tells you like, oh, those must be the bugs that work for, you know, the church that's a good bit north of the area you find her at. And so you're kind of working your way up there, but obviously you got a lot of Metroiding to do. So some of the big changes they have here, the charms are still around, but they are very different. Instead of having a set amount of slots to fill up, you have different slots for different types of charms and such. So I have the initial ones all go for the same one, but it seems like they're, you know, you have this like almost like crest kind of thing with different spots to place them on. And so you'll have different categories of things that go together, which I assume is to force you to kind of use things that you might not use normally, which so far has been interesting, not super complicated or anything. So far, but that's been pretty nice. The geo currency has been replaced by like a crystal shard kind of thing that you can only get 400 at least initially. You might, in like a Zelda style, get a way to extend that limit, but I imagine that's to keep you from being able to farm currency to buy stuff you may not necessarily be expected to buy right away. So like the first time I use it, or I've used mine, is the first town you get to, they set up like this essentially like quest board, and one of them is like, oh, you need 200 of these crystal shards, and I was like, well, I'm not spending them on anything else, so here you go. As you're like paying to fund the repairs that are going on, you'll see it, the village kind of change a bit over time. But this time around, they have actual quests. So, you know, the main quest of going up to this religious area to find out what's going on, you know, for the main story is an actual quest that on the big map you see sort of the general area you need to go to, but it's not accessible for a while. From that quest board, I got a few others. One, like, needing to kill these certain enemies, and they drop some garbs that I need to collect to bring back to this thing. You get one for these fleas that you find. They have lost buddies that you need to find for them. And then there's, you just run into NPCs who give you things to do, which I find funny because they call them promises. So it's like, or no, wishes. So you're like promising to fulfill their wish kind of thing. And it's all kind of a funny way they do it. So there's that. And yeah, I think it's a very good game so far. It's definitely probably a bit tougher early on than I think Hollow Knight was. I think it's all probably relative, depending on how you are at these kind of games. But yeah, been enjoying this so far, looking forward to playing some more of it. But yeah, it's about, I've gotten to some new areas where I'm trying to work my way around and figure out, mostly trying to find a bench so I could have a save point. But they have, you know, a bunch of stuff going on here, a bunch of new enemies and all that. I don't think there are any repeat enemies, but they do have enemies up front that kind of chase you around a little bit. And there's some weird thing of like, there's villagers that have been corrupted, and they all kind of seem to be turned into perverts in a way, because they have real weird noises when you start attacking them, almost like they're subs. They're like, I need to be punished, and you hit them, and they kind of get almost orgasmic kind of noises coming out of them. It's real weird. I just think you're fighting a lot of perverts in this game, so there's that. Which maybe makes sense with some of the religious tones of this, because the other currency you get are rosary beads.
Yep.
That you're collecting. And in like a soul style, you get versions that are like already on strings, so you can, you know, use them later when you need more, but they're kind of ones that you won't lose when you die. And in contrast to the original Hollow Knight, when you die, it does not create like a shade that you kind of have to fight to get your, you know, full form back. It turns into almost like a cocoon that you just have to hit once and it breaks apart and you get your rosary beads back. I don't think there's anything else that changes that. But yeah, the interface looks nice. They have a bit of a different vibe to it, whereas like the original, you were getting juice with every attack to do your heal. Here, it's kind of a currency that gets used for that silk spear. It's like silk that is like spooling up on a thing. So once you get it full, you can use it for health. But if you have it partway, you can still use it for that spear kind of thing. So it's got a lot of interesting stuff to it. So I'm looking forward to playing some more of it. It seems like people are unhappy with some of the bosses and the how far away the benches are to some of them. Which I feel like there was some of that in the original game too. So yeah, but there's that. I also got Lost Soul Aside from Gamefly, so I've been playing that a little bit. I've got about 2 hours in. Basically finished the prologue and got to the next big part of it, where the game starts opening up. And yeah, this is a game that like initially was getting a lot of attention because it looked really good for a game made by a solo person, or like a demo being made by a solo person. They kind of kept working on it up to the point that Sony kind of picked them up, became publisher, and kind of funded them to keep working on the game. And I feel like the quality of the visuals has not aged as well as people might have hoped for.
Yeah.
Because I would say this feels like a game that they probably hired, you know, a decent amount of people, maybe a few dozen. I don't know. I haven't looked at the credits for it yet for the main team.
I think it was like about like 45 people.
Yeah, that would be surprising because it's a game that looks solid, but it doesn't look like, you know, as probably as impressive as that game that demo looked back in, I think the copyright says 2017.
Mm-hmm.
For what it looked like then, it probably doesn't look, you know, equally as good compared to what we get today.
Yeah.
Like, mostly the characters kind of look like they have a little bit of plasticky faces kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel like is a hallmark of a team kind of working above their pay grade, essentially, their skill level for this stuff. But yeah, this is an interesting game. It's an action game with some RPG stuff to it. You kind of go through the prologue in a slum town where the main character Kaiser has come back after a mission of some imports where he's kind of working with the resistance to undermine the Empire and kind of get a lot of FF7 remake vibes out of this area. It kind of has a lot of look of that Midgar kind of slum town kind of look to it. So there's no like layers of cities above him and below him or whatever. But yeah, he finds out his sister's been working with the resistance since he's been away. He's not necessarily happy because he doesn't think of his sister's being capable of that kind of work, but finds out she's been doing just fine with that. So he accepts her help on the upcoming missions. They're having the Empire's in town doing a big parade, and they're gonna do something to disrupt the Emperor during this parade, which the only part you really get to see is that you're setting off some special fireworks or something. But in the process of setting all this up, a bunch of meteors crash into the city and all that, and these alien creatures start attacking everybody and seemingly stealing their souls or eating their souls or something. And you end up falling off this building into a big hole in the ground. So you're doing most of this prologue underground as you're finding your way out, and you run into this weird crystal dragon called Lord Arena, who is sort of related to the creatures that are invading the city. Some weird name, but essentially it seems like their energy seems to be the same energy that has created some people that are called the Gifted Ones. Mm-hmm. And so you take on this crystal dragon, you know, his powers, and essentially become a Gifted One, because you find out the same the same energy is involved with all that stuff, as well as the aliens. So you're trying to, once you get out of the prologue, you're kind of trying to figure out what's going on with all this stuff, and you're going to another area to investigate. And that's kind of where it starts to open up, as you know, you get more menus available. There are like 4 of the 8 menus that were locked, or 8 menus options that mm-hmm. were locked up, like equipment and skill points and a few other things. You get 2 more unlocked with the equipment and the skill point stuff, and so by that point I had like 5 skill points. And you could buy those to either add new combos or stat upgrades or whatever to your character. And it seems like I'll be at some point getting like a bunch of potential like perk modifiers for the sword I have. They mentioned a bunch of that stuff, but where I'm at, I'm just now starting to be able to collect materials for crafting stuff. Although the only thing I can craft right now is a stamina potion. But yeah, the action is all pretty basic, you know, square, 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 triangle kind of stuff. They start adding more as you kind of go through and learn more of the powers that, you know, Lord Arena's stuff gives you. Which you get, you know, dodges and blocks and ability to parry and do like perfect dodges and all this that give you extra power attacks that you can do off of those. And you get a special attack with Lord Arena that you just hit the both triggers to turn on, and that gives you, you know, essentially like overpowered attacks for a bit. And there's a whole thing with use L2 plus 3 of the face buttons to use extra attacks. I just have 1 right now. That stuff fills up as you kill enemies. The action works pretty well, but as you would expect, it's, you know, taking cues from the Souls games, as well as I would say like God of War and Final Fantasy VII Remake and some of this other stuff. You can like do lock on, there's stamina to the dodges. So there's like a better dodge that you have until you run out, and then you do like a smaller dodge. And it's the same with the blocks, where you can do like a better block until you run out of stamina, then you do something else. I forget. It throws a lot at you, and it keeps track of all the tutorial stuff. So if you need to refresh yourself on anything, there's a whole section of the menu for that. But it seems pretty good so far. Just maybe not what people would have expected, you know, 8 years ago. If it had come out probably within a few years of that, it might have been pretty impressive. But for what this seems right now, it's probably a solid game so far. I think it's $60, so it's not a top tier priced game, but it might be one that's better picked up at like 30 or 40. But yeah, I've been enjoying it so far. I'm going to keep pushing along. But yeah, a lot of the story stuff is a little bit weird. Mostly just the characters being not animating well, like not great transitional animating and all that. But it looks fine enough. It's one of those things where people expect this to be like a big budget game, and I don't think it is a big budget game, especially when it's made by a bunch of smaller dev team in China and all that. So yeah. It's one of those. And you got like weird hair animation where it always seems to be flowing, even though it doesn't feel like it's a windy game or anything. A lot of that like super light hair and scarves and such. So it's one of those. And the last one here I have is Everybody's Golf Hotshots, which I just got a code for the other day. I mostly just play through the tutorials, just kind of refresh myself on how the game works, and yeah, that's pretty much all I've done. So I'll be playing some more of that this week and hopefully get a review in the near future. So that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I have not been playing Silksong because, Hollow Knight didn't really click for me. So, yeah. But instead, I've been playing a couple different games. One of the games I played that I got for my PlayStation Plus subscription, because a couple of new games came out this week for that. One of them is a game called Viewfinder, and it's a first-person puzzle game. Essentially, you are playing a researcher who's going through this old simulation program that was created in the past by a group of scientists who were using it to try and construct various prototypes to help fix the climate crisis. Just spoiler alert, and the game kind of, it's not really a spoiler because the game pretty much reveals it pretty early on. It didn't work. One of the things that happens early on is the machine that's running the simulations short circuits, and so you have to go back into the power station and, you know, basically do a little bit of a old-fashioned power circulation. But while you're there, you walk by a cork board that's like got a bunch of like newspaper clippings on it and a couple of big glass windows where you look out onto a cityscape where the sky is a bright hellish red. There's stuff that looks like ashes falling, and all the various buildings are connected via these floating corridors in between each of them. And you can sort of see through, like, some of the various clippings that, like, people have to go outside with, like, personal oxygen machines. So, things aren't exactly going well. And essentially, what you're doing in this old simulation program is you're trying to go through it and see if you can glean anything from their notes, their experiments and everything that you can use to actually, you know, build as a foundation on their work that you can then further to help. That's basically what the game is. You're going through the simulation. Each parts of the simulation, there's like four or five parts of it. All of them defined by essentially acting as like, they all have like, there's like a hub world in each one that was like based around, that was essentially like the whatever simulation, like whatever area in the simulation that one of the scientists was making their time in, and it sort of defines their personalities and their likes and dislikes. And in all of these little hub worlds, you'll find these teleportation machines, and that's where you go to the actual puzzles. Essentially how all of these levels work is there's a teleportation machine that you have to get to. Sometimes it's already powered. Other times it has to be powered either by things like through batteries. It's usually connected to like a power station with like a platform on it that needs a certain number of batteries put on it to get it started. There's later on, you'll come across some that use sound to power them up. There's also a variety that you'll come across fairly early on where you can essentially just stand on like a nearby platform and it'll charge up the battery or whatever and turn on the teleportation machine. But the problem is when you step off of it, it starts to deplete. But as long as there's still power in the teleportation machine, when you get to it, it still works. But the actual like puzzles of this game are largely based around the use of photographs. Starting out, it's just like photographs that you'll find laying on like tables or whatever. A little short while later, you'll get your hands on like a Polaroid camera. There are others that are like stationary viewfinders that will produce a certain number of photographs when you use them. And essentially, you take these photographs and you hold them up in front of you, and the simulation essentially lets you take these photographs and manifest them into the simulation's reality. And when I say that, I mean it essentially all of the things that were within the borders of that photograph, from the objects that are in it, the scope of distance that you see, the skybox, everything there manifest into the simulation. So you can do this to like turn a photograph around. You can use it to make like bridges or staircases. You can use it to make things disappear. Even things like, again, the previously mentioned teleportation machines. If the teleportation machine is working and you can get, you know, the machine and its power source all in frame, you can take a picture of it and then manifest that picture in another part, and the teleportation machine will still work like a normal one. The one exception is that later on in the game, you come across these this material in the simulation that's basically like a self-replicating kind of metal that if you look closely, it actually breathes, which is admittedly kind of creepy. For whatever reason, the cameras and the pictures just do not work on it. Like the pictures will still manifest, but like the material itself will not disappear. It'll just basically act like, you know, nothing has happened. Whatever is in the picture will just kind of go through it. But you can also like use it for like if you need to like reproduce batteries. If you say like there's like a puzzle where there's a teleportation machine and it needs two batteries, but you can only find one battery in the level. Well, all you got to do is take that battery, take a picture of it, and then take that picture, turn it upside down and manifest it, and the battery will just fall out of it, and you've now got a second battery. But yeah, that's Viewfinder. It's actually very, very enjoyable, very fun. One thing I did find, at least for other people who reviewed this game, a lot of people for some reason didn't like the dialogue and the characters for these games. They thought that they were like obnoxious, which I found strange because it seemed perfectly normal to me. But I mean, that's just a personal thing. The other game I've been playing is Sly 4. I finished the last game in the original Sly Cooper trilogy. And anybody who played that game back in the day remembers that game kind of ends in a way that sort of opens up for like a possible sequel. And obviously we did eventually get a sequel, but it took a few years for that to happen. And by that point, Sucker Punch had moved on to the Infamous franchise and left Sly kind of in the past. So another developer swept in to sort of take over from there. And it's still fun, you know, it's still, you know, really solid Sly Cooper gameplay and everything. And I remember playing this on the PS3 when it first came out and liking it. But when you play these games back to back, you really notice the massive changes that happened between developers. For one thing, the character animations are a lot more fluid, but the actual character models themselves are really off-putting. Part of this, of course, is due to the fact that, you know, this was originally a game that was meant to run on a CRT. So, you know, it's going to look a little off if you're playing with, you know, a modern day television. But the character designs themselves are very just awkward. They're kind of more detailed, but they're also a little more uncanny. And that goes also to, like, the animated cutscenes as well, where they went with a completely different animation style for it. And, again, it's not bad, but it's definitely off-putting. But, you know, it's still Sly Cooper. It's still a lot of fun. I will say, as somebody who remembered playing the original Sly 4 back in the day and playing this now, the writing is still kind of off, because the way they decided to, like, drag Sly back into the thieving lifestyle is kind of hand-waved away. But, you know, whatever. And other than that, I've also been playing more Zero Ranger again, and I actually finally managed to get to the next part of the game after, because just like with Void Stranger, which, you know, this is Erasure's studio's other major game that I've also been playing, that's a lot of fun. This is a game that is very sort of like simple on its surface, but it reveals more of itself the longer you play it. And I managed to get to the second part of the game where essentially the person you've been fighting against this whole time, they just sort of throw you back into the first stage. But the big difference is not only is it more difficult, but you've also got new enemies you have to deal with and new bosses as it happens. And there's like there's also this new element that's added to it now, because at this point you can basically shift over into Zero Ranger mode, which is the sort of vaguely humanoid mech form that your ship can take. And there's just some other weird shit that happens too, but it's still like a lot of fun. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
So yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
First up here, we have some Nintendo subscription news. They added a new game for the N64 app on the NSO Plus expansion pack. And it's a game everybody was excited for, Forsaken 64.
That is a game I remember remember existing.
Yeah, I'm sure the box art is the most memorable thing about this game.
Yeah.
Because it features, I think, just half of a woman's face with a big Forsaken tattoo on her cheek.
Yep.
And I remember that being like, well, that's a weird thing for your box art.
Mm-hmm.
Never really digging any further into it and seeing like, what else is this game? Never played or anything, and it wasn't until this bit of news, it's like, oh, this is a first-person shooter. I guess that makes sense, because I feel like half of N64 games were like first-person shooters.
Yep.
Stuff like that. And yeah, this sure looks like an N64 game where you're a first-person shooter, so.
Yep. I do remember playing this back in the day. And it wasn't terribly good. It wasn't bad, but it was very mediocre. It had a neat idea, but it just did not, especially with the control scheme, it just didn't work very well.
Yeah. That's not really a huge surprise.
I should point out though, originally Forsaken was originally a PC game. But like it got better reviews on the PC than it did for the N64. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Night Dive is working on a remaster of this or something they did on 2018. Boy.
Well, if they did it, yeah, like I did, if it is, it's going to be like the PC version, because the N64 version is a hot mess.
Yeah. This is, it came out in 2018 for basically PC and Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably how nobody knew about this, probably.
Yep.
So there's that. I assume this is the PC box art that just literally looks like a moon with the big F on it.
Yep, that's the PC version.
Like, boy, that's not distinctive at all, but I guess that's how it goes.
Well, I mean, that was kind of back in the day when, like, PC gaming art tended to be kind of simplistic and tried to, like, have, like, a especially for first-person shooters, it tended to just have, like, very simplistic art that had, like, a very sort of, that was trying to make a specific statement.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just sort of part of that.
Yeah. But yeah, this looks interesting. I might check it out at some point, mm-hmm. but yeah, I could easily just forget about it. So there's that. Serious subscription news for the week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah. Coming up here, later this week, Virtua Fighter 5 Revo World Stage. We'll be mm-hmm. having a closed beta test from September 10th to the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
You can register on the official website for a chance to get in and see it for yourself. Yeah,
they'd like
to hear. So yeah, you can check it out. It'll be cross play, so you can play with anybody on PS5, Xbox, or PC.
Mm-hmm. They're really trying to get the Virtua Fighter name back into the gaming lexicon.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, they're in the midst of working on Virtua Fighter 6, and they're trying to reintroduce the franchise to people, because it's been a while.
Yeah. That's definitely been a thing, because they mm-hmm. put out, like, a new version every handful of years.
Yep.
I feel like if it doesn't gain traction, then they just kind of do whatever, move on.
Yep.
But, yeah, this one will be the latest version. They've been literally putting out versions of Virtua Fighter 5 for about 20 years now, so.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's one to look up. Make sure you get one of those Sega accounts and sign up for it if you want to check it out early. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it'll be out, I think, in October.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Yeah, October 30th. So that'll be interesting. Let me see here. Yeah, we got this was announced kind of out of nowhere. Puzzle Quest Immortal Edition.
Yep.
Was announced for pretty much everything but the Switch 2.
Mm-hmm.
PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. It'll be out September 18th. The ironic thing is that the Switch already has a remaster of this of the original Puzzle Quest.
Yep.
So they're getting the second one for more of your money. Yeah. They seem like they worked on the visuals a bit, because all these puzzle pieces on the board look shinier mm-hmm. than they did originally. So they definitely redid a lot of that stuff. And probably redid a lot of the art too. Or used a version that was redone. So
mm-hmm.
I would say Puzzle Quest was kind of a really big deal back in the day. It did really well kind of coming out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made a bunch of sequels and spinoffs that didn't really do as well.
Yeah.
I remember Puzzle Quest 2 was like, what if we did Diablo with this? And it did not do well.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the space one. I forget what that was called.
The Ascent?
No.
No.
The Puzzle Quest space sequel.
Oh, that one. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Blacktrix, mm-hmm. which was hex-based grid, and so things could move around in different ways because it's space
mm-hmm.
and all that. And I really like that idea for it. Mm. But yeah, the second one, not so much, especially because I feel like I remember doing an interview with the devs, and they very much adamant, like, yeah, the PSP version's our favorite. And mm-hmm. they never put another one on the PSP. They went DS, mm-hmm. I think, for the sequel. Then brought it to XBLA and PSN and all that, or no, it was just Xbox XBLA exclusive.
Yeah,
it's like, boy, you guys made the wrong decision to go exclusive with some of this. Maybe that also killed it. And all that. So yeah, but there are better versions of Puzzle Quest now. There's Gems of War. That is really good from the same devs. It's just free to play, so it's got some of those hooks to it, but the mechanics and all that work really well. But yeah, Puzzle Quest Immortal Edition seems like it includes a bunch of the content from the original game and some of the DLC expansion stuff they've done since then, with some extra stuff. Yeah, Revenge of the Plague Lord was the expansion, and their Legend Returns was the Switch edition, so they added some stuff from there. And I believe there's a new few more quests and whatnot added for this edition. So yeah, more of this you can enjoy. So yeah, there you go. That'll be out next week, I think. Yeah, next Thursday. So there you go for your fun. And then yeah, we got this. There was a State of Play featuring a 007 First Light.
Yeah.
With about 30 minutes or so of gameplay for that game. And yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, it actually looks incredibly fun.
Yeah, they basically started with a story bit as you're kind of, I think the big overarching story is that a 00 has gone rogue, I believe 009, and you're kind of on his tail and trying to figure out, like, what his goal is with all this. And you start with your crew showing up on a car, driving to a big, like, party area for rich people, but the Bond is the driver, playing the help essentially. He's kind of wanting to do his own thing because he's that kind of guy, as they want him to stay with the car and kind of stay in his role, and he decides to follow up on a hunch and ends up on a big car chase after a guy that seems suspicious, and then confirms that he's suspicious and involved in something.
Yep.
And yeah, gets onto a plane, and that's a whole fun looking thing with a very Uncharted kind of style of setup there. As you're, he's hacked the plane somehow and is, like, controlling the at least the tilt of it, so you're kind of tilting the plane left and right to take out enemies by, you know, having big crates and whatnot smush them and all that. There's a good bit of fighting to it, with melee stuff as well as, you know, guns and gadgets and such that you can use. They kind of did that whole mission, which ends up with him falling out of the plane with a bunch of the stuff that was on it and trying to find a parachute to save himself, which was a very Uncharted 3 kind of bit there. So yeah, that looked all fun, and then they kind of came back with a little bit more gameplay, just kind of showing off the how the combat works and how the stealth stuff works, because it seems like you have kind of like an improv kind of aspect to the game, where teams can kind of take different approaches of trying to blend in to areas or convince people that he's, you know, who he says he is and not, you know, some spy or something, and all that. And yeah, it just looks like a really interesting and fun looking game. There's definitely some rough elements, some rough frame rates and such, but I bet that stuff's going to be ironed out by the time it launches. Because they announced it'll be out March 27th next year. So it'll be an early game for 2026. And yeah, that game just looks really good. So I'm really looking forward to it. We did not see the gameplay stuff. They have a few of the videos here, the various versions of it, linked here, so you can check them out. But yeah, looks really nice.
Yeah, actually looks like a lot of fun. I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for this one next year. Because it's been a long ass time since we've had like a solid James Bond game.
Yeah.
Like a long time.
Yeah, because it's been owned by Activision, who just decided not to make them for a while. Then they lost the rights, and nobody else wanted to make them.
Mm-hmm.
At least until IO stepped up. So, yeah, this looks like it's going to be a pretty neat-looking game. So, I'm excited for that. But yeah, that's that. And speaking of interesting-looking games, Hollow Knight, Silksong. Launched and
basically broke the internet.
Broke all of the storefronts, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC.
Yeah, pretty much every let's play that you'll find of this on YouTube, a good chunk for like beginning chunk of it is literally them just the experience of them trying to actually purchase and download the damn thing.
Yeah, a lot of like people saw a lot of Twitch streamers who were just not showing the game for a while because they just could not get through on Steam to buy it.
Yeah, because like it was that's what you call a hit game right there.
Yeah, and sort of validated a lot of developers that were deciding to move out of the releasing that time frame.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, we dodged a bullet here.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, it would suck if you were. Maybe launching around the same time and had the entire storefront crash, essentially, and your game being unable to be bought because everybody else wanted to buy something else.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Steam had the biggest troubles there because I remember trying to get it on the phone version, the app version.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I think it was working fine for people like still wouldn't like validate payment stuff. I was like, ah, screw this, and I bought it on PlayStation. Though I also bought it on Steam later because I was like, I'll play this on my Steam Deck as well. So there's that. But yeah, it's also after the launch, they did have some trouble here. It seems like the game is getting a review bombed in China.
Yeah,
particularly because the translation seems to be pretty poor.
Yeah,
from what people that could translate this stuff were suggesting is that it seemed like they did a lot of flowery, like almost Shakespearean stuff with the Chinese translation, in the way it doesn't seem like it really fits the game.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they had two people doing translations for this game versus six for the original, though I don't know what the timeline of that was for that. But it seems like one of them particularly might have been a pretty shitty person, especially was apparently leaking things about the game in the lead up to the launch. So yeah, seems like they made some poor choices there on people to hire for this, and Team Cherry has said they'll be getting some work done on fixing that and hopefully getting that done pretty quickly in the next few weeks. So that's good to see. But yeah, the game seems to be doing quite well in spite of that, those issues. So I don't think that's going to hurt them very much just for the time being, though I don't know if there's anything else going on with the reviews there. But yeah, since they made the change for the reviews to be more language based, so you know, we would just see English reviews. Yeah, it's saying here everybody else is pretty positive in the like the 80s and 90s. 70%, 73% in Korean, but simplified Chinese 38%. With 28,000 reviews, so maybe there's some culture war stuff going on with that too. I don't know. I would not be surprised by that. How much where's our English one? Okay, we got 39,000. Yeah, almost as much of that with just the Chinese reviews, so that's interesting. The overall seems to be about 77%, which seems pretty good still. But yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Some interesting news for Silksong.
Yeah.
One notable issue that's hopefully they get that fixed in the near future. They have the money to pay for more people to go over it and make sure it's actually good. But maybe some of the other localizations also need to be double checked as well. I've seen some people saying like the French ones maybe not as good as the original one. So yeah, that's a shame. But yeah, there you go. There's your Silksong news of the week. Next up here, Halls of Torment announced that they will be coming to consoles sometime in the near future, alongside a bunch of new content. They got a new DLC called The Boglands. And a free update that they are calling Bardcore. Because, the Bardcore updates adds a new character, the Bard. Six new abilities, six new in-game artifacts, three metal music tracks, and manual level ups, probably some other stuff. DLC adds a new area to the game. I think it would be the seventh new area, or seventh area in the game. Yeah, two new heroes, 50 new quests, new abilities and gear, and a bunch of other stuff that goes with it. So that sounds like like a bog type area, a sunken realm of creeping roots, drowned spirits and creatures that never died quite properly. So yeah, that sounds neat.
Yep.
For this very cool vampire survivors like that decides to go with the aesthetic of like the original Diablo. Complete with the UI that kind of matches that vibe
to it. Yep.
So yeah. It's a really cool one of those, and yeah, be cool. It's coming to PlayStation 5 and Xbox, hopefully in the near future. Because it seems like that couldn't be too far off for the way they've been talking about it. So yeah, that's cool. If you need a new one of those. Let's see. Yeah, Ubisoft is celebrating Rayman's 30th anniversary, which is cool. They need something to celebrate. Along with that, they have mentioned that Ubisoft Montpellier and Ubisoft Milan are working together on the future of Rayman, which I assume means a new game. Or maybe a collection, I don't know.
Maybe.
People are seeming to suggest they might have both being worked on. So that'd be cool to see, because not much else has gone well for Ubisoft, so why not try Rayman?
Yeah. You've tried everything and now you're all out of ideas.
Yeah, well, now they got a new idea, so that's what if we go the one of the first mascots we had?
Yeah, even though the guy who created it doesn't work for us anymore, but
yeah, he does that every once in a while.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the last couple of Rayman games that came out were really good, so you know. Not a bad idea, you know, to like, and you know, make like a whole compilation of the whole series. You know, there's only a few of them. And you know, you
more
can
more than you think.
Probably. All right, let me rephrase that. Put in a collection because there's only a few of them that are actually good.
Let's see. There's Rayman the Originals, a 2D platformer. There's Rayman 2, which was 3D.
Yep.
Rayman 3 was a 3D game. Rayman Origins and Legends were 2D games.
Yeah.
Then you got a bunch of spinoffs here. Rayman Raving Rabbids stuff, which initially was a Rayman game.
Yeah.
The ones after that, you could throw those away.
Basically all the stuff that has nothing to do with the Raving Rabbids. That's basically like where Rayman is actually doesn't suck.
I think you've got a couple of handheld games that could be cool as well.
Yeah, a couple.
There's like the Game Boy Color version of the original game. That's pretty good. There's Rayman M, which is a multiplayer game.
Yep.
Like a little arena fighter game. Let's see. Rayman 2 Forever is a Game Boy Color version of that. Hell, at this point, just give it to Digital Eclipse, because they could do all this pretty well. There's a mobile game called Rayman Golf. Rayman Rush on PlayStation. Oh, that's the PS1 version of Rayman M. So, yeah, let's see. Rayman Garden on mobile. Jeez, Rayman 3, the N-Gage version, and the Game Boy Advance version they did. Rayman Hoodlum's Revenge. Yeah, there's like a bunch of mobile games that they did, or handheld games and such, that are pretty interesting. Of course, they did Rayman Jungle Run, because why not? But yeah, that's a collection that could be pretty fun, especially if you get, you know, a bunch of the devs together to talk about it. Because, yeah, a lot of those games were pretty well reviewed. Anyways, that is fun to see.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a cool thing. And, yeah, I don't know what they would do for a new one, if they would go 2D or 3D. I would say maybe try 3D at this point. It would just be a little more unique than just be like, oh, we're doing more like, you know, Rayman Origins and Legends. That kind of ran their course. You know, you had Astro Bot do very well and be like, what if we do our take on that with Rayman? It's like, that could be pretty cool.
Yep.
So yeah. And especially because you could do the same idea of just having various outfits for Rayman for the various Ubisoft franchises and whatnot you want to do.
Yeah.
Which is not a new idea. They've done that for a various chunk of their games. They've done that, so yeah. Looking forward to seeing whatever that is. That's probably a next year thing, I assume.
Yep.
But yeah, that's cool. And speaking of Ubisoft, Star Wars Outlaws came out on the Switch 2. And seems to run pretty well and do all that. But people are wondering why it's a physical release as a game key card instead of a the 64 gig card. And
yeah, about that,
one of the devs on the team basically said that Snowdrop relies heavily on disc streaming for its open world environments. We found the Switch 2 card simply didn't give the performance we needed at the quality target we were going for. I don't recall the cost of the cards ever entering the discussion, because it was moot. And yeah, that seems to pan out, because it seems like the, I want to say the SSD for the new consoles is up in the like 1.5 to 2.5 gigs per second kind of range. And the Switch 2's SSD is 900 megs per second. But the Switch 2 cards that are the 64 gig cards are 400 megs per second. And it's like, yeah, if you're trying to port a new gen version game to the Switch 2, that probably doesn't cut it. If you can't stream data off of there. And the Switch, Nintendo hasn't really developed a system for installing the games to the internal storage, like the way PlayStation, Xbox do for their physical games. So that's kind of a thing where it's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense there. Sort of the one thing that Nintendo hasn't really allowed, and the Game Key card does the best version of that, which is, has it installed on the internal storage, because it's, you know, downloading it. But yeah, maybe Nintendo will figure that out later on and offer a new solution that allows you to install games off the card. But for now, that's just not a thing on the Switch or the Switch 2. And yeah, that ends up affecting a lot of these kind of ports that are coming to the Switch 2. So yeah, makes a lot of sense when you see this explained this way. And yeah, kind of makes sense that it doesn't work the way that people want it to work. Which is, yeah, unfortunate, but maybe that'll change at some point. But yeah, there you go.
All right, yeah. One of those peculiarities about, you know, still using a card or cartridge-based console in 2026.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. Let's see. We got some more industry news. Yeah, we saw that EA announced that they were going to work on a college basketball game earlier this year. It seems like maybe they're not doing that anymore, or at least.
Yeah.
Maybe they are posturing that they're not as a way to trick everybody, but it seems like they were trying to get licenses for all the schools, and after they announced their thing, 2K started talking to schools for deals to get into NBA 2K, it seems like. And that kind of pissed EA off because they wanted to, now they were trying to get exclusive licensing, but they were definitely trying to go all out for licensing, wanting to get the men's and women's teams, get the NCAA licensing, which you would need for the March Madness stuff. And yeah, there's a leaked email from EA Sports VP of Commercial Licensing, John O'Brien, to multiple college licensing directors that seem to indicate that they have given up on their plans. Yeah, saying here, hi, I hope you had a great Labor Day weekend, given there are some schools choosing to accept the 2K Sports proposal for inclusion in NBA 2K. The offer to be included in college basketball video game will unfortunately have to be rescinded. Everyone at EA Sports is disappointed that we all couldn't find an acceptable path forward, but we appreciate your support in trying to bring a standalone college basketball game with all men's and women's Division I institutions and student athletes, conferences, as well as the NCAA, in a way that fans have told us they want. We really appreciate your support. Mm-hmm. Good luck with back to school and an exciting start to the football season.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a little bit of like sour grapes. Well, unfortunately, you won't get this cool thing we were going to do, but that's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So, yeah. Doing this to try to get people, shame them into working with them on the thing. I don't know, but yeah, it's a little bit disappointing, but not really too surprising because it's, I imagine the 2K stuff would just be similar to some of the other stuff where it's just like, oh, we got, you know, 10, 12 teams that you can play your final season for whatever. Before you go to the pros, kind of thing. That's like, yeah, but that's not what people want. Really, they want, you know, a full college basketball game that lets you enjoy the atmosphere and all that, versus just something that's a version of their career mode. But yeah, there you go. There's your EA news for the week. So yeah, this is a fun thing. Let's get to some layoff news.
Yep, here we go.
2K has laid off a number of Fire Access employees. Seems like at least dozens of workers that have been impacted in this, mostly because Civilization VII did not quite sell as well as they were hoping. It seems like choices they made for ways to change how that game's worked, as well as maybe just some things that weren't as good as previous Civ games, led to poor sales, and it seems like they decided that they could not keep on all the people that they wanted. I imagine they're probably going to work on updates and such for that game, and maybe some DLC, but they don't need, you know, 100% of the staff to do that, and see, you know, work on whatever's going to be next for that, so that's unfortunate. Yeah, I've definitely seen a few people that posted about them getting laid off from Firaxis, so that's a shame. That's a great studio there. Not really new in recent memory for 2K. They do some layoffs because we know they laid off a number of people from Bioshock 4 developer Cloud Chamber as they kind of are reworking their game to get that out in the next couple of years. What else? They had mobile studios that have laid off some people earlier this year, so definitely have that going on, which is a shame because they're still doing just fine, and they're expecting next year to be a big financial year for them because GTA 6 will finally be out, and expected to take them to new heights of financial success, so yeah, fun times for 2K. I wish these people all the best, so there you go.
Yeah, not really much to add to that other than that's the way the industry is right now.
Yeah, so there's that. And then we have some more layoffs here at Dreamhaven. This is Mike Morhaime's studio, former Blizzard president. A company that has a couple of developers working for them, making games like Sunderfolk and the recent release Wildgate, both of which have not sold very well. But it seems like they're laying off an undisclosed number of people. For Dreamhaven. Seems like the internal development teams have been largely shielded from the layoffs, so they remain committed to supporting its video game portfolio. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like those two games did not do super well, so they need to cut some costs at the publisher themselves while they figure out what's next for what they're going to be making. So yeah, that sucks for them. Luckily, the devs aren't being punished, at least just yet. We'll see. But yeah, there you go. More mm-hmm. unfortunate news.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. And last off, we'll be kind of returning to Take-Two Interactive.
Yeah, and this one is going to be kind of infuriating.
Yeah, because it seems like when Microsoft was canceling Perfect Dark, there was a chance they were going to be able to have another partner come in and sort of take over funding and, you know, overseeing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a number of publishers did inquire about this, and the one that seemed to get the furthest was Take-Two Interactive, wanting to potentially take it over, but it seems like the talks were ended when it came time to who would own Perfect Dark as an IP. Because, yeah, you're going to spend, you know, tens of millions of dollars to get this game to the finish line. I wouldn't blame Take-Two for wanting to own the IP along with that.
Mm-hmm.
Considering they're taking on, you know, most of the risk at that point.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that Microsoft doesn't want to get rid of the IP.
Mm-hmm.
Or something that might do very well. So, yeah. It makes all the sense. This got pretty close to finishing the deal, but when it came time to, you know, figuring out some of that stuff, that it did not go well. Which is why Crystal Dynamics had the layoffs last week. Mm-hmm. As I suggested, probably was part of that. Considering they were working on that game with... I forget who the other studio was, the Microsoft owned one, but whatever. They shut that studio down anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a unsurprising situation. Would have been neat to see that get finished, to see what the heck that was going to turn out to be.
Yeah. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Leaves us in a fun place of waiting forever to see if another Perfect Dark ever happens, but I'm going to mm-hmm. guess probably not.
Yeah.
Unless somebody else finds a really good pitch to Microsoft.
Eh. Somebody out there, I'm sure, can come up with something, but for right now...
Yeah, especially an external studio, so they don't have to pay to keep them around forever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's your sad news about Perfect Dark. It just died because Microsoft didn't want to keep paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't want to give up the property if they let somebody else finish funding the game. So
mm-hmm.
that's capitalism for you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's going to do it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you to Brandon for joining us.
Always.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about. We got a decent amount of stuff coming out here.
Mm-hmm.
In the near future, yeah, Borderlands 4 is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be fun to see how that turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like it's already selling pretty well. I believe it's one of the top sellers on Steam.
Yep.
Just in pre-orders.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... not a huge surprise. The Borderlands is incredibly popular.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see what else is happening this week. Let's see, where's this list at? Let's see. Okay, yeah, I think I'm at the right part here. Yeah. Let's see, the 9th. Oh yeah, the Bubsy Collection is out. Everybody's favorite game. Let's see, Garfield Kart 2, All You Can Drift. Borderlands 4. Yeah, Marvel Rivals releases on the PS4. Because they're always in the hunt for more people to play that game. NHL 26. Here we got LEGO Voyagers. The sequel to... I forget what the previous game was. LEGO The Builders. Or LEGO Builders Journey. Let's see. Henry Halfhead is out this week. And...
yep.
Or no, that's next week. I went too far. Yeah, I went too far on that. LEGO Voyagers is the next week, not this week. So yeah, we'll have more stuff. Yeah, there's like more and more as the month goes along, as it gets closer to the end of the month. So yeah, some decent stuff this week, but also it's just more time to put into Silk Song. So there's that. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers who are also excited about playing some Silk Song or excited for Borderlands 4.
Yeah.
Because there's always a bunch of games out there to play.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.